Welcome to the Booktubby Podcast, the podcast about books and the fantastic people that read and write them. I'm Ben Hunter. I'm joined by Sarah McDewling, and we're here with Jeremy Lachlan.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy, you've written this fantastic new book, Jane Doe and the Cradle of All Worlds. What is it? Why should we read it?
Start with a hard one. Middle grade YA action adventure about a young girl who has to journey into this infinite labyrinth between the worlds to rescue her father, who's disappeared inside. And it's just a lot of fun. When I went into it, I just wanted to make it as big and bold and brash as I could. So I just filled it with all of my favorite things, like booby traps and carnivorous forests and runaway trains and shifting rooms and all that kind of stuff. At the heart of the story is just a girl wanting to save her dad. You should read it because it's amazing.
It's a great review.
I have to say that, don't I?
But it's true. You've got a couple of staff members here. We only just got our copies and we dive straight into it and are enjoying it so much. Just enchanting, really, and it's such an amazing, cool idea. Where did the idea for this first come?
I've always been obsessed with the big action, epic blockbusters, whether it be in books or film or TV. I majored in screenwriting at university and thought that was going to be it. I wrote a feature film for my honours dissertation, and I thought I was going to be a screenwriter. But I was travelling around the world in 2007. I was in the Cairo Museum, and I kind of lost my group because I've always been inspired by museums and caves. I'm a bit of a nerd, but I find when you're lost, it's when those kind of what if questions arrive. You know, what if I took a wrong turn? What if there's a secret passage through here? What if this painting came alive? All that kind of stuff. And while I was in the Cairo Museum, I just got to thinking, what if there was this infinite labyrinth? It was almost like a museum between the worlds. But what if it was known to an entire population, and what if they journeyed through it to have adventures in all of these other worlds, and that kind of returned with tales to tell? But what if one day it kind of stopped letting them inside, and what if that happened because of the child? So that's where it all snowballed from there. So I started plotting it right away, and I knew immediately it had to be a book. It's quite filmic the way I write, but I knew it had to be a book, and it kind of, the ideas just went from there, kind of like dominoes through my head.
I say start with a book and then it will get adapted as a film or even a TV show.
Fingers crossed on that one. I actually have a film agent, which is really exciting, based in New York, and exciting things are happening on the film front for that.
So, fantastic.
Yeah, very early days, but
so it's very cool. Well, I think it would definitely, it's a cinematic style of story. So like so many like big, amazing, like special effecty type stuff.
Yeah, it would be very expensive.
And Jeremy, you are yourself a bookseller or have a bookseller background.
Yes. I worked with the wonderful crew at Oscar and Friends in Double Bay and Surrey Hills for a couple of years. I had to stop working there at the end of last year or the beginning of this year, just when all this really kicked up, because I now have book two to write, and with impending deadlines, it was just too much. But it was a really difficult choice to make to leave, because I did love it. I was only there for 3 days a week and writing the rest. And it's such a great job. I think every aspiring writer should be a bookseller at some point, because you learn so much about the industry from the ground up. It was very, very special to spend my time there.
What's it like going from the bookselling side to the book writing side?
I was writing while I was doing it, but as being the journey towards being a published author, it's been very surreal. It's taken a long time to kind of get to this point. It's like 11 years of my life, and I'm 36. So I feel like that's like a third of my memorable life, or life that I can remember to get to this point. So thank God it worked, and I managed to pull it off. My mum is very relieved. It's very surreal to be standing on the other side and going through it. But I have some of my good friends, my dear friends, the published authors themselves. So I've been privy to the journey and the process through that. But going through it myself, I still can't quite believe it's happening. I still hold the book and just wonder how do you exist as a thing outside of my head. I'm loving every moment. My publishers, Hardy Grant Egmont, are just so wonderful. They've made the experience so incredible and enjoyable. And they've just really thrown their whole weight behind it. And
not just here, you were showing us photos of a UK cover and...
Yeah, that's the most surreal thing, because when I always have... I think it stems from my love of the big action epic stories. It's just the way I think. So when I went into this, it's exactly what I wanted to have happen. Obviously, I think most people do. And the fact that it's now reality, the fact that it has gone around the world, I think we're up to 10 territories around the world and multiple languages and all of that. So I do have to constantly keep pinching myself. But, you know, it's not like it just landed in my lap. I did work very hard for this, so I'm just very thankful and lucky that it happened.
Yeah, it must have been a really big party at Oscar and Friends when you finally got the piece of paper to say it's happening.
Yeah, well, and it's weird though, because you think it's going to be like you get the green light, you're told it's going to happen, and then there's going to be a party, but there's so many little steps along the way.
Yes.
So I got my dear agent Grace Heifetz at Curtis Brown, and she's amazing. And then there's this bit of a lull while it gets sent out to all the publishers, and I was just chewing my fingernails for kind of 6 weeks and started thinking, oh, my gosh, has he put her money on a dead horse kind of thing? Or, is that the phrase, dead horse, dud horse?
I mean, I should talk about dead horses.
Horses are lovely. But, yeah, and then the next step happens, then the next step, and you kind of – it went to auction, and it went between two publishers, which was – very thrilling and terrifying at the same time, and then the deal comes through, and then you wait for the contract and all of that. But it's been an amazing journey. I hate using the word journey. I have to say, I'm sorry. It sounds so.
I'm okay with it.
Blanky. I don't know.
In context.
It's anyway, it's fine. In there now. We'll go with it.
Shall we say quest instead? No.
Oh yeah, that's much better. Yeah.
Taking it back to the cinema background or the screenwriting background, I find that intensely interesting. And reading this book is just like delving through scene after scene out of epic films, but particularly Indiana Jones. They even went on. There's a cool website. I don't know whether it's coming from you or your agent or the publisher itself, but it's pitching this book out and trying to explain what it is and where it sits in the universe. And there's this cool graphic pointing in different directions.
Yeah, my publishers did that. Yeah, yeah.
And you've got Mad Max up here and Harry Potter down here, and you're just sort of shining out of the middle.
Shining, thank you.
But yeah, we've been in this climate where people that produce children's literature and the educators and the groups of people that are trying to push it out there, and there's a lot of talk about what we need to do to drive or entice children and young readers away from screens and to the written word. Whereas this book just seems to be a full frontal embrace of cinema. And I think it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel that as well. Just from when I started, I wrote a blog post recently about early inspiration for it, and I actually felt a bit bad. You know, I was a big reader as a kid. I read some books. I got around, but I was obsessed with cartoons and TV and movies.
We shouldn't be ashamed to
love that. Yeah, exactly. And I felt like, oh, because I've read other writers and they'll start quoting all these books that they loved as a kid. But for me, I mean, I was obsessed with He-Man and The Mysterious Cities of Gold, which I don't know if anyone remembers that, but it was an amazing cartoon. The theme song is amazing with the Golden Condor. I was obsessed with them, and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was my favourite movie as a kid, which is slightly disturbing with the hearts being ripped out and everything. But the thing is, I wouldn't just passively watch these things. I'd make the stories my own. I had a whole bunch of action figures around my house, and a typical Toy Story thing where you end up with all this spin-off mishmash of different characters. And I would just play games around the house and develop my own stories. I was kind of living them and bringing them into my own world. And I never grew out of that. I don't have action figures anymore, but I will still, whenever I watch films, I'll think when I go home beyond that film and what I possibly would have done differently, or where could it go from there. And I know, yeah, I kind of embrace all forms of storytelling in this. And as I said, I just wanted to write the kind of story that I would want to read. So, of course, a lot of filmic influences came through.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And can we talk a bit about Jane Doe herself?
Yeah, sure.
So she, I mean, leaps off the page as this sassy, strong, like, kind of wisecracking 14-year-old.
Yeah.
Is there any, like, you know, drawing inspiration so much from, you know, other films or books and stuff, you know, where do you think she came from?
Well, I think all of the characters are me kind of splintered.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same for most writers. Nobody's inspired by anyone in the real world or anything like that. My mum liked to think one of the characters was based on her. I said, you can't claim that. Like, that's terrible.
Who? Winifred?
Yeah, Winifred. And I was like, oh, first of all, no. And
you that's kind of, awesome.
Yeah. And you know, like, pick the most amazing character and, you know, the most capable. But I was also like, no, you don't know what's going to happen to her. Like, don't say that you're her. But no, it's the interesting thing about Jane is for about 7 years, the protagonist of my story was a boy. The story was actually called Finn Pigeon and the Cradle of All Worlds.
And that book, that meme is in the book.
Yeah, there's a little, well done, very sharp. There's a little Easter egg. I had to put Finn in there. So yeah, for a long time it was Finn Pigeon and the Cradle of All Worlds. But then one publisher who was showing interest a while ago said that because it was a boy-focused adventure, it should be very younger middle grade because that's what was selling well at the time. And then a second publisher said the same. But they wanted me to make it, cut it down to, say, 50,000-word story. And at the time, it was about 70, 80. And I did try. I cut it down and cut it down and cut it down, but it was really becoming a story that I didn't want it to be. I was losing all of these, you know, a couple of great characters and a couple of really great action sequences, and it just felt like a really watered-down version of the story. So I just sat back and thought, well, if you're using that logic that if it's a boy-focused adventure, it should be very younger middle grade, and I have to take out these kind of grittier, scary bits, does that mean if I just change the protagonist from a boy to a girl that I can keep the scary, gritty bits and make it a bit younger, a bit longer and aim it at a slightly older audience? And so I talked to a lot of my female friends about it because I just wanted to change the pronoun, not adjust the character at all. So that's, I went through and did that. And the story just came alive in a way that I really wasn't expecting. I mean, I loved it before, but it became Jane's story 100%. And there were little things I had to change about, hair and dress and all that kind of stuff. But the surprising thing going through that process, and I loved it. I could talk for ages about it, but I won't bore you for too long. There were some moments that the gender change did make things a bit tricky within the story.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's not boring.
It was really fascinating. There's one character, for example. I don't want to give any spoilers, but so when it was Finn Pigeon, he would journey into the manor and meet this character who would grab him by the neck and pin him to the wall, and it kind of became a running gag. It happened several times, but suddenly when it was a guy doing it to a girl, it just felt like it was too much. And again, I talked to a female friend of mine and said, no, keep it, because that happens. That's a reality within the world that we live. But I felt like for the target age group, it was sending a message that I didn't want it to be.
Yeah.
And it did turn that character into a much more malevolent kind of thing. So I chose a middle ground. So it does happen. He grabs her by the neck now that it's Jane, and he goes to do it a second time and she stops him, kind of thing.
Awesome.
So little things like that. And there was another version, another point in the story where they're in a boat, and when it was Finn sitting in the middle and a female character at the front of the boat and this other character, this guy in the back, and the female character at the front is rowing the boat and needs to rest, so hands the oar back to Finn and says, I need you to row. Finn's never been in a boat before, terrified of water. So decides to hand the oar to the guy behind him and make him row. Nobody blinked an eye when it was that version. In the Jane Doe version, when it was the female character in the front handing the oar to Jane in the middle and Jane saying, oh, I'm not going to do it, and handing it to Hickory, it was suddenly, oh, what a princess.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, when a boy does it, it's good delegation, but when a girl does it, it's, you know, how dare you, what a princess, which of course I think is very common in
That's really the climate.
Yeah. But again, it really helped the story because, of course, it should be where my hero says, no, I'm scared about this and I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway to help my friends and all of that.
That so it seems like more of a Jane response.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It was kind of false of the character to not, you know, to grab the oar and go with it, kind of thing. So anyway, a bit of long answer, but it's been a fascinating process. And I love Jane.
I'm glad she ended up Jane.
I honestly can't imagine the story any other way now. And now that I'm writing book two, she's just such an absolute joy to write. I kind of wish I was more like her than I actually am.
I think readers feel that way too.
I've had some great feedback, particularly from young people reading it, saying that they really adore her as a character, and because she's certainly no stereotypical kick-ass female character kind of thing, which I didn't want to have. So I don't know. I love her. So I love them all.
This story began 10 years ago in Cairo. And now we've just got book one, and now I've got book two coming in 12 months' time.
Mm-hmm.
How does that feel?
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm fine.
And also, how many books are there going to be, do you know?
So at the moment, I've been contracted for four, so two duologies. Book one, Jane Doe and the Cradle of All Worlds. Book two will be coming out in August next year. And then that'll kind of wrap up this first quest, this first adventure. And then there's a second duology planned down the track. And, yeah, I'm loving book two at the moment. It's a real thrill to write. It's a bit daunting because I've never been in this process, this state before, where I have to now write the book while I have all of this stuff going on. It's the story's no longer mine. It's been a bit of a process to even let book one go. I was definitely ready for it after all this time, but, you know, it's not mine anymore. It's the readers. They can do with it what they will. Just try not to break the spine. But, no, do what you want.
Don't break that's the my spine. Ending. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. book two, it's everything that I thought it would be and more kind of thing. I'm discovering more about it and about the world and the characters. One character in particular who is kind of comes to the fore in book two a lot more, and it's an absolute joy. So I can't wait to share. Book one with everyone.
It's a stunning thing in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, so many of my family and friends have known that I've been doing this for 10 years and they've never read it. So I'm loving the fact that I'll be able to finally share it with them. One of my dear friends who I grew up with, she's in the acknowledgements, Karen, we've grown up together. And it's an enormous show of faith from her, because when I first had a complete draft, I said, would you like to read it? And she said, no. I'm waiting for the day. It'll be on the bookshelf somewhere. So one day I'm just going to wake up, go to the bookshop, buy your book, take it home with a cup of tea and read it.
Oh, wow.
And that was like 5 years ago before any of this happened. So she's just waited patiently. And having that faith, I think a lot of people don't realize how much it means to a writer be told, look, it'll happen and I'm going to wait. That was absolutely amazing. So I can't wait to share it with people and, yeah, book two as well.
Yeah, well, the wait is over.
it's happening. Oh, my God, in a couple of weeks it'll be out there.
Jeremy, can't wait to dive back in.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking with you today. And
thank you.
We need to let you go and get back to writing.
Yes, so much to do. No, thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
Jeremy Lachlan has been our guest today. His book is Jane Doe and the Cradle of All Worlds. You can buy it today, right now, at booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.